Hey, it's Ryan Reynolds, and I'm here with Keith, co-star of my upcoming film, If, only in theaters May 17th. Do you want to tell people the big news? All right, I'll do. Sign up now and you'll get unlimited for $15 a month and 6 months of Paramount Plus Essential Plan on us.
MintMobile.com/switch.
Upfront payment of $45 equivalent to $15 per month. Unlimited over 40 gigabytes per month. Face lower speeds. Videos at 480p. Active Mint customers by 531.24 get 6 months of Paramount Plus Essential Plan. Auto renews after 6 months. Offer ends May 31st, 2024. Separate Paramount Plus registration required. Terms and conditions apply if rated PG.
This episode of Fat Mascara is sponsored by BetterHelp. Listen, we all carry around different stressors, big and small. Therapy is a safe space to get those things off your chest. Plus, it can help you develop coping skills that make your life easier. I will give you an example. If you've listened to this podcast for a while, you've probably heard me say it to Jess or to a guest, reframe. Well, I learned that technique from a therapist. Here's an example. Now that I'm a freelance writer and podcaster, I get lonely working from home and I feel like I'm never going to get to collaborate on projects again. And that's the truth. Reframe, I get to choose which projects I work on, so I'm in control of what I work on. And if I want to collaborate more with others, I don't have to ask anyone's permission. I can just do it. See what I did there? That's reframing. If you've been thinking about starting therapy or are looking for someone to help you process things and give you coping skills, give BetterHelp a try. It's entirely online, designed to be convenient, flexible, and suited to your schedule. Just fill out a brief questionnaire to get matched with a licensed therapist and switch therapists anytime for no additional charge. Get it off your chest with BetterHelp. Visit BetterHelp.com/mascara today to get 10% off your first month. That's BetterHelp, HELP.com/mascara. Again, BetterHelp.com/mascara. Hey everyone, it's Jen, and I have decided this is going to be the summer of uniform dressing. I'm going to have a few pieces on heavy rotation, and I'm telling you right now, they're all going to be linen, and they're all going to be from Quince. I don't know why I'm going so hard on linen right now, but it just feels right. And Quince specializes in timeless pieces made of premium fabric, and the best part is that all the Quince items are priced 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have premium European linen dresses, blouses, and shorts from $30. I am personally very into the 100% European linen pants. They're cropped and easy. There's even a cute pinstriped version. And when I wear them, I look like I just stepped off a yacht. Do I have a yacht? No. Do I know what yachters wear? No, but that's the vibe. The linen pants come in sizes extra small to 3X, and they're less than $40. Okay, like 10 cents less. They're $39.90. But the quality is excellent, and they wash really well. How does Quince do it? They cut out the cost of the middleman and pass the savings on to us. Plus, Quince works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing practices and premium fabrics and finishes. Get warm weather ready with Quince. Go to quince.com/fatmascara for free shipping on your order and 365-day returns. That's quince.com, Q-U-I-N-C-E, quince.com/fatmascara to get free shipping and 365-day returns. quince.com/fatmascara.
Hello, hello. Welcome to Fat Mascara.
Look who's on the mic.
Yay. What's up? How are you?
I love these little pop-ins. I love your sabbatical that's not a sabbatical. She can't stay away from us. She loves us.
I like this one.
Jen, just JK, keep on working. JK. I'll pop in when it seems fun. No, not
JK,
at all.
JK.
We've been planning this interview for a while. Oh, by the way, I'm Jen Sullivan. She's Jessica Matlin.
Jess.
Welcome
How are
to
you?
Fat Mascara.
What's going on?
Oh, I've missed you, friend.
I missed you too. I've been listening.
I know you have. Is there any threat? Like, no one's threatening your spot on the mic.
But we've had some
good guest co-hosts,
though,
haven't we?
Really good guests, yeah. Really good guests.
Yeah, both guests and guest co-hosts.
Yeah. No, I know. It's been really fun. It's been a good listen. I've been learning a lot.
Maybe I'll take a sabbatical later in the year and you put it together so I can have, like, I feel like it's a good place to, like, reset.
It's
going to
be
listen.
A wild format. And now you come on. And now I talk.
You know, you separate yourself from your work. Like, the artist needs to step back from the
artist. I think that'd be really fun. That would be like a really cool project.
Go on, continue.
I like take the mic for a couple of weeks and it's like, actually that happened with Hollywood Raw. I listen to Hollywood. Did you guys listen to Hollywood Raw? I fucking love that podcast. And the other night it was Dax Holt on it. And I didn't feel badly for him because he's great, but something happened with his co-hosts. And is like his co-host, like it was very like, it was so real. It was like, yeah, his like son was sick or had like a soccer thing. And he was like, yeah, so it's just me tonight. And it was just him monologuing all the news. He was like, I don't know if you're going to like it. Maybe this sucks. And I was like doing laundry, listening to it. And I was like, go, go. You're doing great. You're doing great. And I wrote him feedback in the Spotify thing. And I was because I felt for him because he's like, I don't know. And at the end he was like, maybe you thought this was boring. I don't know. I tried my best.
That's me on the little pre-intros before the guest co-host. I'm like, being really vulnerable, guys. It's just me here.
I was thinking about you, but he was like, but his show is like, yeah, it's like all news and it's all about their banter.
Yeah. Sans banter. It's hard to do a podcast all by yourself.
Yeah. God, I'm so glad we're not recording video for this because I'm like, I have no eyelashes.
Yeah, Jess is a busy person. We both are today. But in case you came here not for us, but I know you miss our banter, so you kind of did. We've got a third musketeer in the studio.
Wait, Jen, really quickly, before we get to him, do you ever do eyelash tint?
I do, yeah. You know I'm turning gray everywhere, so I tint my eyelashes and I tint my eyebrows.
See, I did that. I did it once, and it washed out in like 2 weeks. And I'm like, why am I paying for this?
Yeah, it didn't last long, and it was pretty pricey.
It was really pricey, and it was like, yeah, I think it's just mascara for me.
Okay, well, I'm glad we figured that out while on the mic, while Carlos was listening to the episode, and he's like, are they going to get to my interview?
Yeah, he's like, wait a second. He's like, this is my moment. Okay, so Carlos Huber is, if you don't know who he is, you very likely have smelled his work. Jen is going to rattle off his CV in just a moment, but this man is so talented, so charming, so good looking. I hope we have a big picture of him.
He's so good looking. Yeah, we've been doing the cover art for the podcast is now the guest's photo. Because I was thinking when I listen to podcasts, I'm always like, who is talking? You know, you want to see who they are. I think it's helpful to have a picture of the person.
He's the whole package. He's so nice, so humble.
How about I give you a little bit more detail on that, shall I? Okay. He loved your hyperbolic hype up, though. That was really helpful.
Okay. No, but he's so lovely.
He is lovely. It's a great interview. But in case you're not aware of who he is, he's a fragrance developer. He's the founder of Arkiste, a line of fragrances that restore authentic historical experiences through scent. I mean, can you come up with a better description than that?
An intellectual.
Yeah. You've heard us go on about how perfume can be nostalgic. Well, this is a man who has literally turned that concept into a company. And he doesn't just do it for Arkiste. He's also developed scents for brands such as Trudon, St. Regis Hotels and Resorts, J. Crew, El Palacio de Hierro, Vacation, Tequila Clase Azul. I mean, there's more and more. I'll put the links to all of them in the episode recap, which is down in the little show description in case you don't know. So we're going to talk about what it is that a fragrance developer does and how that position fits into the alchemy of the fragrance creation process, just like evaluators and perfumers do. But we'll also talk about his background and architecture, explain his work, think about the smells of some Arkiste things. And for those people who have been listening to the podcast since we talk about fragrance a lot, and they're like, I don't know what these notes smell like. He's going to give you some tricks for remembering what different perfume notes smell like. So helpful. So you're going to learn a lot. You're going to have fun. Sit back, relax. Let's welcome Carlos Huber in the virtual studio.
Carlos, this is way overdue. Sometimes we have someone on the show, and I always feel like a little weird in the beginning because it feels like we've had a party and I've sent the invite too late.
Right. Well, listen, it's never too late. And I'm certainly happy to join any party at whichever moment. So like, okay. Thank you for having me.
You know what I mean though?
Yeah, of course.
I think I'm in like this cycle of birthday party cycle. And when like you like give the kid an invite that was like a little late. You know what I mean? You slip it into the
Carlos
backpack.
Isn't that kid. Don't worry.
Okay. Yeah. Cause you should have been like on the tier A list, but it just, we've had a lot of, there's a lot going on, but Carlos, you come up all the time and you come up through your own brand, which we'll get to. You come up through other people's brands and you're just one to know, but we know you've been traveling a lot. We're trying to pin you down. Where are you today in this gorgeous environment?
I'm back home here in New York City.
And it's unsurprising that you're in a beautiful environment because you're all about environment, right? You're all about space.
Yeah. And this is definitely my favorite room in the house, which is like the living room. And I have this like library behind me that is really, I think, kind of like a background to my life. But I'm very honored to be here. I'm very, honestly, what you say is just sort of like a big kind of feather in my cap to be able to like do what I do. And then just to be able to do it again and again and again. Like that's like what recognition is for.
To be able to create.
Yeah.
And like people like enjoy what you create.
Yeah, because that's the whole thing about like this incredible field we're in. I feel so lucky that I get to do this as a fragrance developer. And that I get to work with perfumers, that I get to work on perfume formulas with them, that I get to kind of translate inspiration and research into something that is experiential.
Well, let's back up a second because we have you on because you are this amazing expert in fragrance, but you're not, I want to be clear, you're not a nose. You're not like a traditional born in Grasse, grandpa, great grandpa.
No,
you know,
no, no, no,
seven
no.
generations, snooty roo, you know,
yeah.
Frenchy.
No, I come from a very different background.
We just lost 10% of our audience from France. Thanks, Jess. So,
oh, they have a sense of humor.
And listen, I'm wearing a France rugby jersey, you know, so like rooting for France in every way.
So what is a fragrance developer?
So a fragrance developer can usually be, think of it this way, even before getting into like the fragrance industry, you have a house to build and you have a builder, but you also need an architect. And so the architect is the one that like draws the plan, right? It's the one that you're going to meet with that is going to translate your needs and your program into a habitable environment, right? And that will be translated for the builder in construction terms and construction materials.
And is the builder our friends from Grasse?
Exactly. The builders the perfumers.
Okay. All right.
Who, to be clear, are not all in Grasse, but yes.
Yeah. Right. Yes. Well, yeah, that is changing as well. Okay.
So the builders is the perfumer. The fragrance developer acts as the architect, and it's the mediator or the interpreter between the client and the perfumer. So he should be able to speak kind of like in some way both languages. He should be able to like understand what the market needs or what the client wants, what the brand is, and then talk to the perfumer and talk in fragrance notes, you know, molecules, accords, understand a little bit like what the expectations on concentration and diffusion and longevity are, all that kind of stuff.
Now, nobody could just like pop in, jump in and be like, okay, well, I love fragrance. I should be a fragrance developer too. Like you had to have something to bridge that gap, and your background, and we'll get to that in a little bit, is not in, your first background is not in fragrance. It's in architecture, right? And interiors and space. But what helped you learn more about fragrance?
I had always been interested in fragrance and always interested in smells, I should say. Even as a kid, I was just always very aware and very much into scents. I would always like comment on them. I always loved scented products, whether they be colognes or soaps or just anything I could get my hands on, even as a boy. And then, as luck would have it, and it actually goes back to France in a way, and I am very thankful for that because I did a year abroad during university in Paris studying in architecture there. So I learned French there, went back to Mexico, finished my architecture degree, and then worked in Spain for a bit, moved to New York to do another master's in historic preservation. And here in New York, most of my friends that first year that I came ended up being French for some reason. And partly I think it was because I wanted to keep like practicing the language, and it was just something like a kind of like a comfort thing. You know, I had made friends along the way back in Mexico and Spain that were kind of associated with these other people. And so I had a lot of French friends here in New York. And in one of these sort of like social gatherings, I met Yann Vanier, who's a perfumer for Givaudan. And we were kind of a part of the same group of friends. It turns out that we also knew an evaluator, which an evaluator can be almost like a fragrance developer as well, because she's basically the sommelier in, and I say she because actually, interestingly, most of those roles are covered by women, which is, I think, a very telling thing of like, again, being a mediator, being like somebody who critiques the perfumer's work and can evaluate and move it forward. Anyway, I met we had a friend in common who was an evaluator. And then they, in turn, introduced me into Rodrigo Flores Rue, who is also at Givaudan, of course, kind of like iconic perfumer. And it turns out he's like the only Latin American perfumer working in fine fragrance. So they introduced me to him. We immediately connect over the fact that we're both from Mexico City. We both are, even he is actually of French origin. I am not. But both of us are these sort of Francophiles that are kind of like aligned or associated with this French group. And we just had a lot of also like inside jokes about Mexico City that just made us bond. So I was always fascinated about fragrance. I would always ask them questions. And a couple of times they invited me to the Givaudan lab just to see how things were made and how perfume development went on. And one day, Rodrigo, basically after like ruling him with questions, he says that I asked him to give me classes. The way I remember it is he offered it because I think I would have been too scared to ask him for such a like a big deal question, you know? But we did do that. And so he actually taught me for over a year and a half. I would go every Tuesday after 6 p.m. to his office when he was done with work. And we would have an hour of fragrance class. And we would talk about everything from perfume history.
I'm seeing a movie montage in my head, by the way.
Yeah.
Getting your backpack on, heading over to Givaudan.
I gotta say, it was also a very New York kind of moment. I was at the time working for Ralph Lauren store development.
Okay. Were you doing like interiors?
I was doing the stores. I was working as part of the architecture team in store design. So interiors, everything from like every fixture and piece of furniture that you see designed in a Ralph Lauren store. And usually, because they go into old buildings, they do a lot of sort of like historical architecture, redesign, adaptive reuse, and in a way, preservation work. So that's why I started working for them. And it, I took that job also because it was a New York opportunity. I could get like an architecture job and another restoration job if I went back to Mexico City or if I moved to Europe. But to work like that in such a big fashion company here in Midtown New York was like, I think, a unique opportunity. So I was at the time working for Ralph Lauren and I would finish my day.
You're going to night school with with Rodrigo. Not a bad life. Yeah,
exactly. 57th Street and 5th and go to Givaudan and have like night school.
Shoot across town. Yeah. Yeah.
It was really, there was something really fabulous in New York about it, you know?
I'd say.
These like incredible companies and I had a little bit of a window and access to. So that was kind of amazing. And like, I did kind of understand, whoa, this guy is not just anyone. He is like a master in perfume. And I thought that was an incredible opportunity.
Now, Carlos, most people are not working at Ralph Lauren doing restoration projects all around Manhattan and then hanging out with Rodrigo at night. You're clearly extremely talented, and you did have access to brilliant people and talent around you. But I feel like there's something here that people listening can take and apply to their own careers. What do you think that is?
I would say, well, first of all, thank you for what you say. I mean, that's like a huge compliment. To be honest with you, like you said, I don't come from this sort of like family with like a chateau in France that just had this background or had this.
That's what I meant when I said the Grasse thing, by the way. No offense to my Grasse friends. But like there's a pedigree is what I'm saying.
Exactly. And, you know, I kind of like emancipated around like age 21 because I wanted to move away, because I wanted to go to Europe and do all this. Like I kind of had to do it on my own. To be honest, it wasn't easy. And then I just kind of worked really hard on getting the best result out of like my architecture degree, always trying to get like good jobs that would land me into like then a good school for a master's. And then, I don't know, try to like get something that was, you know, work hard and like can maybe push a little bit more and go a little bit further in things that were like maybe a level of discomfort or like sort of risk. Mm-hmm. So it's not that like I was giving any of these things too easily. I think it was maybe just because I was a little bit like out in the wild and not at home in the comfort of my house, my family household, or sort of like the comfort of the square and the pattern of this is how you do things. I kind of like needed to be more inventive and be a little bit more creative with I need to do. So my advice to that is, if this is something you want to do, if you're passionate about it, just push forward.
Be uncomfortable.
Yeah, be uncomfortable. And don't expect it to happen necessarily tomorrow. It's also not necessarily something that happens, I think, even now. There's always more that you can be doing. There's more success to be had. There's better sales to achieve. There's still discomfort, you know? There's still challenges. So I would say, if you want to do something like this, drive forward with passion and with hard work, and don't expect everything to happen overnight. I think everything overnight is just, they're little things, and just enjoy the joys of that. But don't think of them as like, this is it, I've arrived. I don't think I've arrived myself. I still think there's a lot to move forward and to push still.
It's also because you were cross-disciplinary with getting out of your comfort zone. Like you were working in architecture, learning about fragrance. That's probably, I don't know, tell us, is that how you went then from starting to become a fragrance developer?
I mean, that's another good case. You know, like I was studying, I studied architecture and all this, but because I was in Mexico City with my family and everything, it's not that I had a guarantee of like, oh, I'm going to open my own office tomorrow. It takes a while as an architect to like start with somebody's team. And a lot of times you just end up doing that all your life. So I had to get creative also of like, okay, what am I going to do to move forward a little bit more or have like a better career? Or I didn't have it necessarily like the silver spoon in my mouth, just like, okay, here's your package. This is like your role in life. I had to be creative.
Yeah, but a lot of people have that feeling. They don't go and start a fabulous fragrance company, you know?
Well, this is also maybe another trick, I think. And this is another story. I started Arkeist. My first thought was, this is an opportunity. I have perfumers of the level of Rodrigo Flores and Jan Vanier that want to create perfumes with me and that like my idea. They've advised me to work on a business plan and make this a brand so that we can open an account at Givaudan and they can actually work on the fragrances. I thought that was an amazing opportunity. If it all went to like creating those things and selling 10 bottles of them and that was it, and then it failed, I thought that was still an amazing opportunity that was worth exploring because I had a huge chance. As somebody who loved fragrance, I was going to have the chance to create a collection of perfumes based on my ideas. That was the beauty of it. In that sense, I think maybe it's a positive. In some ways, maybe it's a negative. I didn't necessarily come with like a huge thought out investment plan for like the 10 years forward. And this is like stage one. And this is stage,
just
you know,
wanted
like
to make a good juice. Do you think a lot of people think that way right now? With the 10-year plan, the sell by this,
Yes. I think we are in this age of startups and just incredible entrepreneurship, which is very commendable, of course, and all that. I think this has now become more part of like everyone's plan or...
Yeah, you started Arkeist when I was at Cosmo. That was a long time ago.
Yeah, 2010 I started and 2011 I launched in the fall.
Okay, so it was before I was at Cosmo.
It was a little bit, I think like the niche world was starting to be more noticeable. You did have like brands like Byredo and of course Frederic Malle and Le Labo that were starting to get big, but it was still a very sort of like gentle, very artisanal. Most people were independents. They were very passionate. They didn't come from finance. It didn't come from tech. There wasn't like a big group behind most people. And so we were all sort of like going along, doing our thing and creating our fragrances and being introduced to retailers. And then also there was no social media, really. I mean, that was not a thing yet. Maybe it was starting with Facebook, but it wasn't something that was still marketable, right? You didn't have that yet. And so it was a much more traditional place. And you worked with PR to get desk sides with editors. It was more one-on-one.
Are you still doing a lot of desk sides?
I do, yeah.
Jen's shaking her head.
Yeah, I mean, Jen has actually, we've had like
a
desk side properly.
Well, it wasn't the side of the desk. We were in your friend's apartment, I think.
Exactly.
He's a storyteller. This is like kind of why we got into this podcast, because you'd have these fabulous conversations with people at work in beauty, and you're like, people need to hear this. This is a good story.
Well, that's also why I was interested in doing this with Arkeist, because, you know, Rodrigo, for example, told me a story of how he created Clinique Happy. And what the background story of that is, really, not the marketing brief for Clinique, right? And it is about, it's a two sort of like prong thing. He wanted to create this fragrance for his sister's wedding, which he considered like the happiest person he knew. And as an inspiration for his sister's wedding, one thing that he thought about was a Mexican piñata. So remember, like, we're Mexican. And so he's telling me about it, and I was like, it's the tangerines inside the piñata that inspired you. Because normally, in a traditional piñata, you would have tangerines and mandarins and oranges, like things like that. And so when you hit it, you definitely get that burst of citrus.
That's beautiful. I did not know that.
It was beautiful, neat, clean. It's a beautiful, like, direct reference.
I wish that was in the campaign. That right? would make me want to buy. Not, I had a pretty good campaign when it came out. The dance, wasn't that the dancing? The dancing, yes, but now they need to move on.
Yeah.
And if I saw a beautiful smashed pinata, a big macro shot of a smashed pinata.
Yeah.
Oh my God, that is joyous.
Well, Carlos, we want to hear some of those kind of stories of inspiration that you've had in your work as well.
Not just your mentor.
Not just your mentor, obviously. So we're going to get into that. Before we do, there was one thing you said I wanted to pick up on, which is that you're sort of like a translator. I was thinking this man speaks at least three languages, but his job is also like translating both a client's creative brief to a perfumer or mm-hmm. your inspiration to a perfumer or the product when it's finished to the consumer. Yep. So this has come up a little bit on the podcast recently. People have written in to me and they're like, when you and Jess and your guests talk about perfume notes, what am I supposed to do if I don't know what vetiver smells like? I don't know what a rose smells like. And I was like, let me put this to Carlos, because part of your job is to convey that scent to someone who might not know the notes, right? How do you do that?
First of all, I think when you are smelling fragrances, let's say you're at a store or at a counter and you're smelling things, try not to necessarily think of like, I need to identify the ingredient and by its name. Think more of like the memories that come to you or the associations that come to you. So, for example, the way I started remembering vetiver was I thought of almost like rattan and raffia and those types of dry kind of fibers that have like a woody scent, but it's very dry, right? It's not this sort of like soft, luscious, velvety, woody scent, right? So I started thinking of that. Then I learned, and this was like a little bit like through conversation and research, that in India, for example, they would make blinds out of vetiver, and then they would spray them with water when it was really hot to perfume the environment. And they would have this like refreshing scent of vetiver. So it's like, that makes sense. The raffia, the rattan, then these sort of like blinds of like vetiver. I thought that was like the weaving of them. Like, I thought that was really interesting. So that kind of like chain of association then makes me identify that smell with vetiver. Similarly with anything else, when you think of like tonka bean, but then let's say it reminds you of almonds or cherries.
Well, you have to at some point then smell the accord or the note of a tonka bean.
Yeah, or you start identifying it through like maybe some of your favorite scents. And
yeah, and realize,
Understanding there's a nuttiness there, right? Like a sweet kind of nuttiness.
What's your little memory game you play for the nuttiness of tonka?
I always associated, I mean, this is like a personal thing. I don't know how correct I am here or not, but I always associated a little bit with almond, marzipan, cherry, the cherry pit as well. Then I start thinking of like, I don't know, there's like something sweeter, of course, like in tonka, and something a little bit medicinal, but like in a pleasant way. So there's different things. It's a game of association, and it's more like experiential and memory driven than trying to be the molecular scientist and understanding the raw materials.
I think people get really tripped up with that, and it becomes like too intellectual. Fragrance is very intellectual to a lot of people.
And it really shouldn't. If you really want to get into it intellectually, by all means, get into it. But this is something that I've experienced a lot recently, and I've seen, and people really get obsessed with every field, right? And they want to like pick and really dissect every formula. And suddenly you have people that are very, very, have very strong opinions, intellectual opinions on perfumes. And I'm always fascinated by that because I'm like, oh my God, you're like sucking the joy out of it.
Yeah.
And I really don't think, I mean, listen, there's perfumes that I like and perfumes I don't like. But I don't believe in terrible perfumes. Every perfume, every scent out there
not even
has
one?
A place to be. I just think like there's a time and place for a lot of stuff. I just think there's like working in fragrance, I find so much joy and so much interest and so much variety. I find it very frustrating to make it like an academy of like, this is the only correct way and everything else is like crap.
It's that guy, you order a bottle of wine at dinner and the guy that's like, and then he's like, swirl, 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 swirl. And he's like, having a...
And you're like, go home.
Okay.
Get out of here.
Enjoy the glass of wine.
Yeah. You know? And like, sometimes a like a cheap red wine that you get like, that the house wine is like delicious and good enough. And it has a purpose. It's like wanting everything, every item in your wardrobe to be like a bespoke suit or a made-to-measure dress. Not everything has to be that glad. You can also have an Old Navy t-shirt and enjoy it. Again.
You know I like wine, so I hang out sometimes with people that like wine, and it's just, they're filtrating it through their mouth so they can smell it.
Oh my God, that's so disgusting.
and I'm not saying I like everything. I'm not saying that like I would wear everything. I'm not saying like I can still sort of like say, ugh, that like reeks. But I'm not writing a letter to that perfumer and saying, how dare you? And that's what's happening in the world right now.
Well, that's just, people think they have a right to weigh in on everything, don't they?
I'm just picturing someone angrily writing a letter like, dear Jacques, how dare
you put the note of, you go know, into
like
with
just social media and TikTok and Instagram and be like, you have these people that are just so insanely upset about just whatever a perfumer did. Like, really upset.
You realize something's going on in their life. It's not about your fragrance that they're upset about. Oh my God. Those people have problems.
I know.
I want to bring your background in architecture back into this, and I'm curious if you lean on it still in your work today. Like, when you're talking about fragrance or the terminology you use or the structures of fragrances, does it inform your work?
Every day, every way. I'll tell you why. Like, architecture, part of it is obviously ideation and drafting and drawing a plan and all that. A lot of it is project management. A lot of it is administration. I mean, like a good architect is not out there just because of him like drawing something on a napkin, and he had to set up an office. He had to create a whole like business around it, market himself as a successful architect to get clients. He has to, again, translate and be able to talk to a client and then to a vendor and a construction contractor and negotiate with everyone. So there's a lot of that. I have to come up and program productions, right? They're not constructions, but they're productions. I have to source ingredients and different things like glass bottles and caps and pumps and stickers and boxes from different vendors. Have to make sure that all of it is ready at like an approximate date and then produce, do quality control on that.
You're leading the whole project. You're PMing the whole thing. You're doing getting the pricing. You're doing all that.
Yeah. And then there's a lot of course, like, you know, besides like fragrance development, there's designing the packaging, understanding like scale, proportion, that kind of thing. I do think that my background in architecture has helped me a lot with that. I kind of do everything myself. And sometimes it's challenging, but I think like definitely my background has pushed me to do that myself.
Yeah.
And then even in fragrance terms, I think it was easier for me to understand the way a composition is constructed in top notes, hard notes, base notes, just from like the simple kind of architecture of like a foundation, a structure, and then a layer of decoration or ornament, right? Like if you think of a wall, it's made out of like these layers, the same way that a perfume is made out of notes. So that may be a simplified metaphor for it, but I think it actually is real.
So many of your scents are like location based, and they're around like a setting, a scene, like a literal, like geographical space. Where is one of the places that you've really enjoyed going, so to speak, with fragrance? One of your most successful scents, doesn't need to be commercially, but just in your mind, like what was well executed?
I think definitely the beach is always like a big source of inspiration. I mean, it sounds very, and I don't mean it in a banal way. It sounds maybe a little bit like simplified, but I think the evocation of the beach is actually incredibly rich because you have a lot of different smells going on. You have the ocean, you have the salty breeze, You have the minerality of the sand. You might have obviously some like flora and just botanical aspect to it.
You're not at the Jersey Shore, if that's going on, but yes.
But if you are the Jersey Shore, there's other notes, there's other grasses and other things that like would also be part of like the smell. So again, it's actually way more specific and way more detailed oriented than just like the beach. It's just like a simple thing, right? And I also like that sunscreen is such a huge part of it. And
yeah, I love that.
Two of the fragrances that I've done that I have become really successful, and one kind of like begot the other, are Sydney Rockpool and then Vacation. And Sydney Rockpool came first. Sydney Rockpool was inspired by pretty much like by a day at Bondi Beach in Sydney. And I was kind of blown away. I think it's like, honestly, like the most beautiful urban beach in the world. It's kept impeccably. Like there's not trash anywhere. I don't know how they do it, but like they do an impeccable job grooming that beach. It's this beautiful golden sand that's like the right texture, you know, underfoot. It's just like soft enough. And then it's just like you have this like blazing, crazy, no ozone layer sky that on a good day is like the brightest blue you can think of. And it's just, it's a beautiful bay. It's just the right size. And it's just really stunning when you're there.
Sounds worth the flight.
Oh, absolutely. And I was like, my first time going to Australia, I was like, I don't know how interesting this is going to be. It's just another Anglo country with another version of like the US and Canada and all that kind of stuff. And I was really blown away by just the people, the food, even landscape wise, like Sydney's such a beautiful, stunning city with a harbor and all these like beautiful beaches and bays and the flora. It's full of like white flowers. Literally every block is like frangipani, magnolias. You have gardenias everywhere, jasmine all over the place. And I just had like a really wonderful experience. I've been over like 8 times and I have like these incredible retailer there that has just been wonderful. And so every time I would go, I would always have these like really beautiful days that were like a picture perfect beach day. And it was in 2006 that I started working on Sydney Rockpool and I wanted to recreate that smell. I had a Australian sunscreen that I loved that you can pretty much like only get there that smells very, very, just very focused on coconut. It's the most coconut forward sunscreen I've ever smelled.
Which sunscreen is it?
It's called Letan, L-E and then T-A-N.
Oh, it's not, is it available here? No.
You might be able to find it somehow.
I know what you're talking about.
I don't think they have distribution. Like, I don't think they have like a wide distribution in the States. So I really love the smell of that. And when you're at the beach, you really smell it on people because it's also something that like a lot of Australians are like raised with. So everyone has a bottle. So you smell it when you're at the beach. So I kind of wanted to incorporate that. So one thing that we did when I brought that sunscreen back, we did a headspace on my arm on what the sunscreen smelled like drying on skin. So it's not necessarily the smell of the sunscreen that we're replicating. It's
the,
actually
like, baked version of it.
It's the baked version of it. And I literally held my hand in the sun for like an hour and then brought it back. And then we did like the headspace. So that was really cool. And it was also something that like when I came with the idea to Rodrigo, he was like, coconut? Like, it's like not, that's not sophisticated. Like, what do you mean? Like, that's not going to be niche.
I can picture him saying that.
Yeah. I thought it was maybe not the most interesting idea, but I kind of pushed. And I just think the result is incredible because you have this really warm, inviting, easy, lovely, kind of beachy scent. But there's a lot going on there. There's like a driftwood note. There's like the sandy kind of sandstone minerality of it. You have like the coconut, of course. You have a frangipani and jasmine that's also floating there in the background, just reminding you of like the walk down to the beach. And I think it's like a very kind of upgrade on a beach scent. And that's one of the scents that then got me Vacation interested in working with us.
Did they approach you because of that scent, or tell us that origin story?
They approached me just out of the blue, just because they found out that I was a fragrance developer and I had my brand and everything. And I guess they researched the brand and everything and they were interested in talking to me. And then we had a meeting where I showed them Sydney Rockpool and I told them like sunscreen has been an inspiration for me before. And when they smelled that, they were like, oh, this is good.
And just to give people the headline, because I feel like it was like a subtle segue, you did the scents for Vacation, the sunscreen brand.
Exactly. So I am sort of like the scent partner for Vacation. I work as fragrance developer for everything that is scented, which...
Now it's there's so much stuff.
Everything, exactly. And then we mostly work with Givaudan as a fragrance house, and we mostly work with, like, Rodrigo has created the EDTs, has created the scent of, like, the classic lotion, but we've also worked with other incredible perfumers there that have done of the other iterations.
Rodrigo still work together on that.
Oh, yeah. So the beach is definitely a place that I think I go back to, and it's not exclusively Australia. Of course, like, it can be different places. I have a scent coming up for this summer that is about the Adriatic. So it's about like Croatia, and it's an island in Croatia. And that was also sort of like a mind-blowing experience in olfactive terms of like just all this bounty of pine needles and rosemary and lavender and fig and just everything you can think of Mediterranean.
That sounds like a place I want to go.
Oh, yeah. We've been going for 3 years, and the scent, like the experience of being there through your nose is what's like the most rewarding thing.
What's that one going to be called? Can we know?
Well, it's coming in June, and it's going to be called A Grove by the Sea.
Summer is fast approaching, which means it's shapewear season. Just kidding. It's really wedding season. But I just got an invitation to a wedding in Philadelphia, and guess what I'll be wearing? Honey Love. I'm not sure about the rest of the outfit or the dress, but the shapewear is going to be Honey Love. Here's why. Honey Love has revolutionized compression technology so you no longer have to feel like you're suffocating when you're wearing shapewear. Plus, they have lingerie-inspired design details that you'll want to show off, and all their fabrics are breathable to keep you nice and cool, which is perfect for hot days. Let me tell you a story. I remember being at a wedding, this was a few years ago, pre-Honey Love, and I wore a jumpsuit, and I wasn't sure if the bathroom door locked well, but I had to take off the entire jumpsuit and then roll down the shapewear to pee, and I was like holding onto the back of the door at the same time, completely naked in the bathroom, and it took so long, and I caused this whole backup of the bathroom line, and after that, I was like, never again. Until Honey Love came along. Honey Love's superpower shorts have a 100% cotton gusset, so you don't have to wear underwear underneath. And there's a convenient opening in the underwear area, so you don't have to take off the whole thing to go to the bathroom. It's so easy. Honey Love products make you look good and feel good, whether it's for a wedding, event, an everyday boost of confidence. Honey Love is the perfect plus one. Treat yourself to the best bras and shapewear on the market and save 20% off at honeylove.com/mascara. Use our exclusive link to get 20% off. That's honeylove.com/mascara. After you purchase, they'll ask you where you heard about them. Please support our show and tell them we sent you. honeylove.com/mascara for 20% off. The summer vibes are just getting started, so shape your life with Honey Love. Hey everyone, it's Jen, and I have decided this is going to be the summer of uniform dressing. I'm going to have a few pieces on heavy rotation, and I'm telling you right now, they're all going to be linen, and they're all going to be from Quince. I don't know why I'm going so hard on linen right now, but it just feels right. And Quince specializes in timeless pieces made of premium fabric, and the best part is that all the Quince items are priced 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have premium European linen dresses, blouses, and shorts from $30. I am personally very into the 100% European linen pants. They're cropped and easy. There's even a cute pinstriped version. And when I wear them, I look like I just stepped off a yacht. Do I have a yacht? No. Do I know what yachters wear? No, but that's the vibe. The linen pants come in sizes extra small to 3X, and they're less than $40. Okay, like 10 cents less. They're $39.90. But the quality is excellent, and they wash really well. How does Quince do it? They cut out the cost of the middleman and pass the savings on to us. Plus, Quince works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing practices and premium fabrics and finishes. Get warm weather ready with Quince. Go to quince.com/fatmascara for free shipping on your order and 365-day returns. That's quince.com, Q-U-I-N-C-E, quince.com/fatmascara to get free shipping and 365-day returns. quince.com/fatmascara.
Okay, everyone, I am one of those people who, when it comes to wellness, sorry, but it's got to fit into the pockets of my day. 5 minutes here, 7 minutes there, when I'm like in the kitchen and I'm microwaving something long, it's got to be convenient. And that is why Alo Moves works for me. My mindset has changed. The app makes it easy for me to keep my wellness routine on track because they have everything in one place and bite-sized little bits. Yoga, Pilates, fitness classes, mindfulness, self-care tips, healthy recipes, so much more. From beginner to advanced, Alo Moves has the flow or class that's going to fit into your schedule. Their classes range from 5 minutes to an hour depending on what you're feeling that day.
You know what feeling I'm feeling most days? I'm feeling 10 minutes. I've been doing Joanna Thompson's. Right? That's about it.
Yeah, that's good.
10 minutes. Joanna Thompson does these yoga lattes in 10. One day will be abs. One day will be arms. Today, Jess, is booty day. And we're just going to get it done all in 10 minutes. If you're trying to get a good sweat, then you've got to try their award-winning workouts like the sweat-inducing yoga flows or the reformer Pilates workouts without weights. You can also find stress relief with meditations, affirmations, face yoga, gua sha, learn to do dry brushing. How many times have we talked about dry brushing on this podcast? Alo Moves will teach you how to do it.
Unlock your personal wellness routine with Alo Moves. Go to alomoves.com now and use the code MASCARA20 for an exclusive 30-day free trial and enjoy 20% off an annual membership. That's alomoves.com, code MASCARA20. alomoves.com, code MASCARA20. I want to ask without, you know, maybe you don't want to tip off your competitors, but is there like a place that like people are like not going scent wise that you think they should be going? Like, where are we not going right now?
You mean as sort of like fragrance ingredients and styles and notes and that kind of thing?
Yeah, yeah, yeah. It could be ingredients
or a story that's in your mind that you're like, this could be a fragrance.
Yeah.
The reason why I like sort of like architecture preservation, archaeology, like I'm a huge believer in nostalgia. I love nostalgia. I like dwell in it and like it just connects your memories to your present. It just like sort of like informs a lot of what I do. And I love nostalgic scents. And one of those things that I love are very powdery baby talcum, baby powder kind of scents. I love powdery scents. I think there's something really, for me, very comforting about them. And at the same time, something naughty about them. One time I bought this baby cologne that I kind of grew up with, and I wore it out one day, and I remember somebody coming over and be like, "Ooh, you smell really sexy. What is it?" And I was like, "It's a baby cologne." So it was very, but it made sense. It made sense. Like there is this muskiness to powdery these types of like scents that I think is
this is getting Freudian, attractive. Carlos.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, I think, well, there's something about it that it smells like just like skin and smells like closeness and intimacy. And let's not take it somewhere like darker than that.
No, I took it there. But Freud would have taken it there. Freud I know what you like, mean.
Freud would have had fun with that.
He would have had a field day with that. But the skin scent, the sensualness of skin and skin musk and that.
It's
like,
kind softness.
Of,
it feels private. Soft. It doesn't feel like you're making a show for anyone.
Exactly.
It's unpretentious.
And you see it, I think, a little bit now in the zeitgeist. We are kind of interested as these generations in exploring the past. There's so many like series and shows and movies that are...
They can't get enough of it.
Exactly. In the 60s and 70s and whatever. I think we are naturally kind of interested in like reclaiming or like experiencing stuff that happened before. So that's kind of like the gist of like why I started Archeist. And again, like I think those types of nostalgic scents are for me something that we should explore more. And that actually... Hopefully people will start tapping into. I think powdery scents can go from, again, from baby powder to a very dusty, dusky orris that is very sophisticated.
Yeah, there is a trend of like skin musks right now, but they're very simple.
Right.
And I want, make it a little dirtier and drier. And what did I say the other day? Dust bunnies to Jess. You know what I'm talking about, right? Like just like
Well, it's orris has that dry. I think dusty doesn't sound very nice, but
we wanted to come up with a better
word. It's a dry papery.
I was going to say it's paper, it's cardboard, it's dry cardboard almost. Again, I'd love that.
I think it's sophisticated. It's not I don't think it's necessarily like a naive. It's like a
I'm also not a huge fan of, and again, this is somebody that I already said there's not, I think all perfume is valid. So I'm not saying necessarily just because I don't like it, it's not good, but there's this really big trend in these very sharp metallic ambers, like really cut through, like almost cut through like skin. And that I find them to be, though I think they're interesting technically, I find them to kind of like cut through formulas and cut through perfumes and kind of almost like don't make room for anything else. So those I'm not a huge fan of. And I think that there's a lot of perfumes that are being developed that way.
Is there like a note that you're talking about in that amber family that has that sharp metallic quality? I don't want to like name like a famous scent, but just for people who are listening, you're like, I have no idea what this man is talking about.
A lot of them are synthetic like ambers, right? They're not even really natural. They're synthetic. So they're molecules. And so I don't know how much like people would like know exactly which one it is, but they smell almost like glass cutting through something.
Okay.
If that's like an image that says something.
The less warm amber family. It's fine. We'll go off record and you'll tell me what fragrance you're thinking of. We're not going to go there. Are you always wearing Arquiste? Are you always wearing your own creations? What do you...
So listen, I have to wear Arquiste a lot because if I'm working on something or anything I'm working on, if I'm doing something for a vacation, if I'm doing something for Saba, if I'm doing something for like St. Regis, I'm working on the scent and I have to wear it. I have to give feedback. So pretty much every day I have to like evaluate something. But I'm just I love fragrance. I'm a fragrance fanatic. And I'm very happy that I have this outlet. Because I think if I hadn't become like a fragrance developer, maybe it would have like developed into something a little bit more obsessive. But I love perfumes. And I just love, and again, this goes back into why I love all perfume. I don't like necessarily somebody telling me like, that's a bad one. I'm like, if I love it, I love it. And I really believe in everyone's right to say that. But I'm again, because I'm very nostalgic, for example, like there's perfumes that I wear at specific times of the day. And again, because I have to wear a lot of different things and evaluate and work on stuff, I'm like washing my arms like several times a day because I have to try different things, right? So I'll wear sometimes like a perfume that I want to wear for an hour just because it reminds me of something or somebody or a different memory.
That's nice.
Yeah. And also when I see other perfumes that I really respect and admire and I just love also the way they smell on me, because that's the important thing. I may love a perfume, but if it doesn't work on me, maybe I'm not going to buy the bottle. But I will buy the bottle and I will keep it. And even if I don't wear it regularly, it is like for me a joy to have that and spray it even if I go to bed.
Isn't it weird how we just like to like have the bottle? You just want to have the thing.
I mean, I think when you understand all the work that goes inside that, again, I respect perfumers' work so much. And also entire teams, like everyone from the account executive to the marketing person to the fragrance developer to just everyone that's putting their heart and soul into their 9 to 5.
The photographer of the campaign.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Like there's so much work that goes in it. So like it just really, and again, they are a marker of a moment in time. Like that perfume was developed because of a zeitgeist, because of something going on in the world.
The moment in time.
Mm-hmm.
It explains your love of nostalgia.
Perfumes after the Second World War, for example, in perfume history, started incorporating smoke notes because of people's experience in war. And they also moved on to, for example, like very bright, fresh florals because people were missing that. I mean, that is like large, like that's big history we're talking about.
Yeah, you're
about.
Living
that's
in a big city where there's no vegetation left. It's been bombed or whatever.
Exactly.
Yeah, give me the flowers. Give me the joy.
But then there's a smoke note behind it.
Because it's still there, yeah.
Because you're it's still part of your reality. And somehow you've like assimilated and incorporated that into what you smell, into what is comfortable for you.
I think that, okay, I'm like taking it like away from something very serious. So like, sorry for the hard pivot, but like I get really emotional when I think about, and Jen and I talk about this on the show all the time, like fragrances from like our like teen years. I get weirdly, and I think this is why I always like look them up, like weirdly on my free time. I look up fragrances and ads from my teens. And
your brain's
early, like,
formative years. Yeah.
And I look them up. I look them up on eBay. How much are they? I did this morning. My friend Aaron, you know Aaron Kelly. We were DMing about Original Stella because we both wore it when we lived together in the Village. And then she was writing me about it. I hope if she's listening, she's going to laugh. And it's like, because that's when we both first moved to New York. And they don't make Original Stella anymore. I don't know what's wrong with you guys. And it's like, it's so special to me. And it's like, yeah, it was a great scent, but it's like, it just makes me think of that time. The ad makes me happy. It's like I want to time travel just back to that time for like one day. it's like looking at a photograph or like listening to a song. Oh my God, I'm gonna like cry.
Yeah, but yeah. and totally, I empathize with you completely. When we were working on Misfit, which is one of the Arquis senses, probably our bestseller.
And love that one.
And it was a very kind of like daunting and also complex development because it was a patchouli scent that I didn't know if it was going to go well. A lot of the feedback I got from retailers, from consumers was like, we don't like patchouli. It's just like an association with it. And we pushed forward with the idea because I thought it was like such a beautiful story.
Were you upset when they pushed back? Were you just like, meh?
No, I know. I was interested. And again, like Arquis is an independent brand, right? It allows me like the freedom to say, well, I want to do this. And if it sells, great. And if it doesn't matter.
I'm willing to take the hit, yeah.
I'll take the hit and I'll work on something else after that. But it was so neat like that patchouli was actually discovered by the nose because it was used as a packing material as an insect repeller, moth repellent, when they were transporting fabrics and shawls and cashmere from India to Europe. And so these shawls would then be taken out of these like patchouli leaf covered trunks and they would smell of patchouli. And that's how the scent became a thing. So I thought that was a really neat story.
He left out the brothels, but we can do that on another episode.
I'm going to go there.
But oh, like, bring in the brothel. Okay.
The thing was also like, because this was a luxury item, they were very expensive. And so they were purchased by people and women who had the means. But at a certain point, they start becoming like just common, passé. Like everyone has one.
Like a pashmina.
Like a pashmina. Exactly. The same
street pashmina.
Street pashmina.
It used to be Uma Thurman with a Prada, and now it's just a street pashmina.
Well, they start being copied and made locally in Europe, and they're no longer the handmade, beautiful, like Indian ones. And guess what? Perfumers start artificially perfuming them of patchouli. So these start like going into like second markets and they start like becoming cheap. And the people who buy them are courtesans and prostitutes. And so in literature in the second half of the 19th century, patchouli is associated with prostitutes. Also because it's a very sexy scent.
I did not know that.
I love that idea. And I was like, yes, let's talk about that. And let's like kind of reclaim that that's actually like a cool thing that like these independent women's making decisions for themselves most of the times, not all the times, but they were reclaiming the scent of patchouli as like something sexy and fabulous.
And it got the bohemian vibe that traveled through to the 20th century.
But just going back to what you said about like a discontinued scent that you were nostalgic for, one scent that I was really a big fan of was Gucci Envy for Men. That was like my first crush. Like that scent was my first crush. Like I was obsessed with that perfume and I wore it forever until it was discontinued. So when we were working on the formula, I loved this lavender amber thing that Gucci Envy for Men has. And I brought it to Rodrigo. I brought a sample of it to Rodrigo that I still had. And he said like, what if we incorporate something here? Because I think like the smoothness of this fragrance would complement the patchouli story really well. And he identified nutmeg in there as well. That nutmeg was one of the ingredients in Gucci Envy for Men that was so significant. And so we kind of like brought that in. So Misfit has like a Gucci Envy.
Nutmeg. Never hear that in a fragrance.
Oh yeah. Those types of like, again, spices I think are something that like just fragrances and fragrance people should go to. Nutmeg, clove, cinnamon, I think all of those can be very, very interesting.
Yeah, it's multi-layered. This is why we can't intellectualize.
Well, you can intellectualize it in a very sort of open way. I think we can. Yeah. We can.
Just don't be snobby
be
about
serious
it.
Serious about it.
We just spent 45 minutes intellectualizing your fragrance.
Right. But just enjoy it.
I'm not interested in like getting like really scientific about fragrance. I like to talk about it in like a...
That's why you have a Carlos around who can take your gorgeous image that you've just created for him in his mind. And he's now attaching little molecules to it and thinking it through and being like, when I talk to my nose, she said she wanted Stella, but she lived in New York City and her neighborhood. And I bet she was using this shampoo because all the girls were using this shampoo. Let's talk about that. What's that? So you need the translator. You need the Carlos, the developer.
That was a great time. That was a great moment.
I'm going to let you guys offline about Jess's fragrance project. But before we let you go, Carla, we just
let's
end
talk
our
about that for the future.
Yeah, okay. I can also feed you some things she said over the years that'll get into this.
Maybe we do a fad mascara like duo.
Yeah.
We could be here like another 3 hours. This is like crazy. All right, Jen, what do we want to talk about next?
Well, you're going to do your Fat Mascara 5. Yes, go ahead.
Carlos is like, I got to go to work. He's like, start the day.
This is like the best part of the day. Like, keep me on this, please. I'm happy to postpone things.
Carlos,
it's Friday.
I want a spin-off pod.
Yeah. It's okay. Good. I'm just like sort of declining meeting requests.
Oh my God, that's
happy
really,
with that.
That's very flattering. Okay. Yeah. All right. So you've listened to the show. You know the FM5. All right. We're going to do quick and dirty. Ready?
All right.
Okay, what is the product that made you fall in love with fragrance?
Oh, God, I think Gucci Envy for Men.
Okay, all right. What is your favorite building in New York?
Rockefeller Center,
without
a
cool.
doubt. That's cool. Yeah.
Wait, the plaza and the high-rises? Which part?
The entire complex, like all the buildings around the plaza. It's more than the plaza. It's like the puzzle of the different like buildings. And everything from like the urban layout of it, the urban planning behind it, to the Art Deco detail, to like the way that the stones are cut. They're like so beautiful. I think it's masterful.
This is a bonus one. It's just tacked on. I've just thought of it. I don't want you to like slander any architects or like offend anyone, but is there a building or place in New York that confounds you? Just because New York is changing so much. And I'm curious if there's something that confounds you.
There's a lot of like residential buildings that I just don't get. A lot of them, a lot of like the crazy high rises on 57th, you know, Billionaires Row. I just don't understand the height for height's sake. I think some of them are so ugly.
I've watched a lot of YouTube videos on them and it's like really fascinating. A, how empty they are, which you're probably all aware.
Yeah.
And just like how, I mean, I'm not telling you anything you don't know. Just so soulless and empty.
Really soulless. I think that it's like something that's happened in a lot of things. It's happened in fashion. It's happened in architecture, certainly. It's a lot of like, it's this just lowest common denominator, like the most normalized bad taste. But because it's expensive, we celebrate it and that's worth something. I think that's exhausting at this point. I can't see another designer doing a potato chip handbag. Please, like, let's do something else.
Thank you for your professional opinion. That was great. Do you have a favorite book?
Oh, God.
He's got many leather-bound books behind him, so you can just grab one.
Right. I have a few.
Just take something.
I love, like, Vladimir Nabokov's Speak Memory. That sounds like I'm, like, a very snobby reader. I'm not.
No.
It's a beautiful memory.
Oh, he's a synesthete. He's like, he loved color and words, and it makes a lot of sense.
Yeah, and also, like, it's his autobiography. And the way he talks about just growing up and the house he lived in and his family and just the things that he's interested in, I think is really beautiful. It's a very easy book to read.
Are you saying that for me? It's a very
you
easy
would love
book
it
to read.
Oh, no.
No,
because I mean it in sort of like it's a very...
It goes quickly because you're just immersed.
Okay.
I'm the kind of reader...
He's selling it to me.
I'm not a great reader. I will go through every sentence and be like, to make sure that I understand. Like, I'm not the type of person that just like goes, oh, all good, all digested and everything. I have to really focus on stuff. So sometimes I like books that I'm like, oh, good, easy. Not like... 1,000 things I need to take into account.
Okay, I'll check it out. Favorite smell from childhood?
Orange blossom. From Eau de Cologne, orange blossom. Again, very kind of like classic 47-Eleven type thing that was like the first sort of scent that like I had
Spanish
as a child.
Laundry detergent, yeah.
Yeah. Well, they would like comb my hair with Eau de Cologne. So I remember, I'm probably terrible for the hair, which is probably why I'm where I am right now.
No, it suits you.
But it, you know, it was like
he
just
has a
like
close
this...
crop for those who can't see him. Very close crop.
It's a very close crop. But I think it's like sort of like we were perfumed as like children. And it was always with that very clean orange blossom.
Last question. Best advice you hold on to?
Treasure and protect and take care of what you have in life and the good people around you. Don't push forward and onwards without acknowledging and having gratitude for the people that have helped you get there and protect that. We can't take that lightly. Anything that you have positive, there's a lot of challenges in life, but anything positive focus on that, be grateful for that, and make sure you nurture it, because that will help you expand that.
That's really good advice.
Yeah, when you focus solely on like the future and you forget what you have right now and forget what people have done for you and just all the little moments, I think that's like very dangerous.
Well, zero commentary from us. We can end our podcast on that. Absolutely, yeah. A wonderful piece of advice. Carlos, thank you so much for coming on Fat Mascara.
Thank you so much for having me. I am so delighted to talk to you guys.
This was a fun one.
I could go on for like hours.
Part two coming soon.
Yeah.
Thank you, Carlos.
We hope you enjoyed the show. It's your reviews and feedback that help us make the podcast even better. Head over to iTunes to rate and review us, or email your thoughts to info@fatmascara.com.
We also want to answer your beauty questions and hear what products you love. To share a Razor One product review or to ask a beauty question, email us at info@fatmascara.
If you send it as a voice memo file, we can even share your voice on the podcast. You can also do that by leaving us a voice message. Our phone number in the United States is 646-481-8182.
Thanks so much for listening.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. warbyparker.com/covered.
Acast powers the world's best podcasts. Here's a show that we recommend.
So, Robert, tell the people, what's a pretendian?
It's just what it sounds like, Angel, a pretend Indian.
Someone who fakes being one of us?
Someone who impersonates a native.
We're talking about real scammers and con artists.
There are pretendians teaching at universities, pretendians running governments, pretendians in Hollywood.
On our new podcast, Pretendians, we'll tell you the incredible story of these jaw-dropping frauds.
Who are they? Why do they do it? And how the heck do they keep getting away with it?
Listen to Pretendians on Spotify or wherever you get your podcasts.
Acast helps creators launch, grow, and monetize their podcasts everywhere. Acast.com.